You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists from all over the world. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. Please search for Fakeologist Audio Chat and Fakeologist Main Show on your favorite podcast app. To listen to the live stream, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. Now, on with the audio chat.
Now recording.
Hi everyone, you are listening to Fakeologist Radio on fakeologist.com. And it is Saturday the 16th of November 2019. I am Gerris from Geneva, Switzerland, and we will be joined shortly by Fakeologist, or Ab, as we call him. So, I did not record an audio chat last night because there was no one to address any issue with me, and I did not go to that art performance because in the end, who is stupid enough to set an art performance in the middle of the week at 6 p.m. to make absolutely no sense. People that have a semi-active life, pretty difficult to attend an art performance at that time. But I figured that it was a deliberate choice that they made to have an audience that has the free time. So let's say as art student, most, which I figure is probably the main target of that organization. But the thing is that when you start discussing certain subjects with people that are in the know, or that somehow link to the higher sphere of power, I have a discussion with a friend that I will not give too much back info about the guy to not make it too simple to discover who he is. But I have a discussion with a friend of mine that is retired and that was pretty high in the hierarchy of the public service in Geneva, let's say, to not be too specific. So, I spoke about with this guy about this art performance, this movement of a feminist artist, and he did mention something to me that I figure is of interest because I did not find that information on the newspaper the few times that I read it. So, there will be a change in Geneva in the public service, the way that the public service are organized. And that change will be a massive push toward what my friend was using as term is the feminine side of the state service. So, mainly the service to the people, the interaction with the people. And he said to me that this modification entailed that, yes, the more feminine part of the of the administration in Geneva was to be more rewarded on that organigram than the more masculine part of the administration. So that is a philosophical change in the way the things are set in Geneva. So I figure that this little art performance and this display and all those things that goes with it, such as the billboard that I mentioned in the introductory chat that I recorded earlier this week, is that there is a bigger movement around me toward the feminization of the society. So I will try to be aware of it and see if the media says something different, see how the push towards it is set, and try to keep you updated on it. So that was the small follow-up I wanted to do about this, those guerrilla girls, those art ladies. In the end, they are not that interesting or relevant to fakeology, but that might have led me to discover a bigger issue that is at play in society around me. But enough of local topics. I have been joined by Ab, so welcome, Ab.
Hey, hi, Jelly. Yeah, the women are taking over society. I don't know. Is that a bad thing? Feminization of the world.
No, it's not a bad thing. I have a daughter, then she's the future of... I have a son also, but he's younger, so his time will come. It's a good thing if there is a small push towards feminization of society. The thing is that a total change is not might not be a good thing in the end.
Well, if it isn't, us men will take it back.
Yes. Maybe so.
We'll take it back. Let's do a quick weather report. How's the weather in Switzerland? Or Geneva,
it's
I believe.
Fantastic. Yes, it's fantastic. It's pretty cold, but the sun is out, and there was a bit of rain earlier, but it's gone now, and there's not that much clouds.
What is pretty cold there?
I will say less than between 10 to 15 degrees Celsius.
Oh, because we're at -9 right now.
Wow. Yes, of course. Which is funny because people all over the world think that Switzerland is a pretty cold country, and where I am, it's not the case. Of course, if you live in the mountain, it's a different scenario.
You're at the bottom of the mountain, I guess. If you're not on the mountain, you're at the bottom of the mountain.
I am on the plains. That is between two mountains, so it's kind of a microclimate.
Oh, gotcha. All right. Well, we're cold here. Our winter came to Toronto early. Actually, if you look at one of my favorite maps, if you type in USA chill map, you will get an entire colorful graphical image of North America. And it shows you all the temperatures in color. And you'll see that most of North America is completely frozen. At this time, this is January weather in November, so I know we don't say global warming anymore. We say climate change, which is a perfect phrase because it covers every possible permutation and combination of weather. So they finally found a phrase that you can't dispute, which, of course, is the whole point. If they want to do something and make some regulations and some changes, they need a phrase that people cannot argue with. So climate change is really good. It's compact. It's got 2 C's, 33. It's just got everything you might need if you're trying to convince people of something that is really impossible to prove one way or the other.
Yes. Yes, and the thing is that it will take several hundred of years. With the measurement equipment that we have now as humans, to really start to build a model that is that we can rely upon, I think.
Yeah, well, everything most of our weather records, I believe, here only go back to the 1930s or 40s. I'm not sure exactly when they started really recording all the numbers. But everything past that is really guesses, best guesses. You know, they take their so-called scientific method to figure out, was it really cold this year? I don't really know how they could do that, looking at trees or rocks. I don't see how they could tell the temperature, say, in 1749. I don't think they can tell us if 1749 was a cold winter in Nebraska, since there was nobody there except the Plains Indians, the Dakotas, or whoever was flying around or roaming around there. So no real way to tell. And, yeah, they'd have to use all our measuring devices that they have today for another few hundred years to see at least a pattern. And I think they're not going to find anything too exciting. It gets cold, it gets hot. Really cold, really hot.
Yes.
And I think they're going to find that North America has some pretty extreme weather. And that's pretty much why nobody wanted to come here and stay here, because if they survived a winter without all the modern things we have now, electricity, gas, they'd be really lucky. Because, of course, in winter, there's really no food here. We can't grow anything for 9 months of the year. So not a great place to live.
Yes. But difficult condition is what built the Viking, for example.
Yeah, the Viking.
The fact that they managed to thrive under those conditions, of course, by allegedly pillaging everyone around them, but the fact that they managed to build a society under the condition of of Scandinavia is impressive in itself.
Yeah, we don't really get too much Viking history over here. It's not really taught, but I know the Vikings are big in Northern Europe and the Scandinavian countries and all the myths that go with them. And yeah, of course, if you can survive the cold year after year, you got to be pretty tough and pretty industrious. And yeah, if someone's got food and you don't, you either ask them to share it or you take it. And there's no time to waste.
Yes. Yes, and the fact is that the extreme weather, at least at the time, tend to eliminate the weaker individual also. The ones that wouldn't survive the weather are the ones that were not supposed to reproduce anyway, let's say.
Well, it doesn't matter. Yeah, if they were supposed to or not, if they're dead, you're not going to reproduce. So it's pretty...
exactly.
Yeah, the strong tend to survive. And it all comes down to food and shelter. In the end of the day, that's all we need.
Yes, and now we are furnishing that to so many strata of the society that demographic is different. Now the people that are reproducing the most might not be the most fit to survive, let's say.
Yeah. Well, let's try and talk some fakeology now. Nobody wants to hear our worldviews.
Yes.
Although I think worldviews of people that are fakeologists are always more interesting than the worldviews of non-fakeologists. So therefore, I know I like listening to fakeologists talk about most things.
Yes.
But we have to mix in some fakeology here and there.
Yes, I did reflect on something you posted about the controlled graffiti spray, the Ye Broke Faith graffiti that was in the cenotaph at Old City Hall in Toronto. You posted about that yesterday.
Yes, controlled spraying. Now, I'm not talking about chemtrails, because that's not really something that I see here where I live. I said that a million times, so I'm not going to argue if they're chemtrailing Oklahoma, because I'm not there. But here, we don't have chemtrails, and that's not what I'm talking about when I say controlled spraying. I was saying that I think graffiti, especially what they call hate speech, which of course means anything you disagree with, that's hateful. If you disagree, if you say anything disagreeable, you are hateful.
Yes.
An H. Hateful or
H-M-H.
Hateful. And I find most graffiti to be vandalism. I see it all over underpasses and on trains, the lower parts of trains where the people that are standing by the tracks can reach, and they wreck and desecrate all the lovely train cars, which I kind of have an affection for trains. I like trains, and I hate it when I see graffiti all over them. I to me, it's vandalism. There's just no other way to describe it.
If the person only sign the name, I think that it's vandalism. But it's a nice painting. Not on a train car, of course, but if it's a nice painting on a wall. Like, for example, outside I can see a painting that is dedicated to a guy that died 15 years ago. And the painting is still there on the wall. So those type of graffiti, let's say, I can live with.
I can't live with it if it's not authorized. We have something in Toronto called Graffiti Alley. You could look that up if you want. And it does look... It's just a bunch of back alley, backs of buildings that everyone seems to come and spray on. And I guess if you like that kind of art, you might like it because it's very dense. They have not left any brick unpainted.
Yes, I'm watching.
Personally, I don't like it. I don't like
covered,
it. I don't. It's colorful. That's all you can say. Colorful, right? I don't like it. To me, it's not art, and it's graffiti. It's vandalism. And what we saw in Toronto, we have a controversy here in Toronto. I would say Toronto, because Toronto's the media capital of Canada. This might not be in Vancouver on our west coast or Halifax on our east coast or Nunavut, way up north. They may not be talking about this, but as you know, Canada is a hockey country. Even though lacrosse is our national sport, don't ask me why, because I don't know. But hockey is our unofficial sport, because it's cold here all the time, and you can put ice just about anywhere half the year. Anyhow, we had a commentator named Don Cherry, and he made a comment that he's a Trump-like figure that speaks on behalf of the working class, I would say, the people that are not highly educated. He speaks for them. He speaks like them. So you could call him a Trump-like figure, somebody who has been around long before Trump and saying the things he does. He's almost comical in the way he talks. But he said something about poppies that crossed into the immigration debate. You know how you can tie almost anything anyone says into immigration easily if you want to create a divide among people. And that's a hot topic everywhere in the world, immigration, isn't it? Yeah, immigration's hot everywhere in the world.
Yes. The thing is that anyway, it used to be that it was less visible. But to come back on what you were saying about the political graffiti, it's something that is common in Europe. It was used just last year in France, once again. And it's always a classic, let's say. It's the defacing of a Jewish cemetery in France. And that happened, let's say, every 4 or 5 years. And it's a massive thing. And the president go there and he says that he's 100% with the community. And let's be clear that I don't have nothing against that community. It just happened that those are the events. So the thing is that on that, the week where the Jewish cemetery was defaced, there was to be already organized a walk against anti-Semitism. And on the same weekend, there was a dinner held every year by a Jewish organization, which is attended by each and every important political figure in the French world, regardless of affiliation. So just to say that in Europe, it's not uncommon to see political graffiti and hoaxing of that nature.
Yeah, I would call most of the hate speech in the form of graffiti, 99% of the time it's done on synagogues, and I think it's controlled spraying as well. I think the people that are creating these stories, the intelligence agencies, are doing the spraying. If there's any spraying at all, I don't know. You could just say they're spraying. I don't know if they actually do it. I didn't go downtown, for instance, to see if they sprayed the cenotaph. I didn't look at it. It could easily be Photoshop, and they make a big story of it. And anyone who says there's nothing there wouldn't be promoted. And the excuse, of course, could be they cleaned it up right away, within hours. I don't know. I haven't been down there.
It was there only for an hour.
Yeah. We don't know. I don't know, because if you want to call into my show and say you saw it, that's fine. It could have been there. But the way I looked, when I looked at the picture online, it looked like the writing was floating on the rock or on the stone. It was quite strange to look at, in the sense that it looked like it was photoshopped onto the picture. But I'm not going to argue if it was there or not. It could have been. And then I thought, well, I doubt it's there now, but I don't know. I might go downtown later, because I have a friend in the hospital right down the street, and I might drive by and see if there's any evidence of blue paint.
Yes, they did, supposedly, but it's more difficult to fake because there was a thousand of people on that specific spot. But last year, the Yellow Vest spray painted the Arc de Triomphe in France, if I am correct.
Okay.
In Paris, so yes, but that might be one real occurrence of political commentary painted on a wall that is that is real. But in most of the case that I speak of, defacing of cemetery, would be Christian or Jewish, the spray painting on the synagogue, yeah, the occurrence that we had in Europe where some people were throwing a ham or a pig's head in front of a mosque. I think that all or most of those events are fake.
But they're either controlled events where they pay people to go do it, or so they're either agents or useful idiots. You can rile people up to do stuff. There are enough people that aren't too smart that would just do it because you've riled them up. Or there are agents that you could pay to go do it. I don't think normal people would do that. Most people are just trying to go along to get along or get along to go along, however that saying goes. So most people don't do stuff like that. But you could probably rile up someone who's not too smart to go do stupid things. I'm sure of that. Because you see people, even in the media, unfortunately, and in real life, that believe a lot of dumb things. I meet real people that think strange things, and there's not much I can do about it, really. And whether it be religious strange things, because of their religion, they believe in a lot of magical things. I can't convince them to unbelieve them. Once someone is in a belief structure, it's really hard to get them out. And just give me 2 minutes.
Yes. So the guy that supposedly painted the monument, his name is Thomas Christian Zog, 33 of Toronto. I really like the wording they are using in Canada when you are committing a crime. He was arrested on charges of mischief under $5,000 Canadian dollars and mischief interfering with lawful enjoyment of property. Let me do that again. Mischief interfering with lawful enjoyment of property. I like that. It's not something that is too bad to have on your criminal record. It's not the hardest to explain. Not the most glorious, of course, but not the hardest to explain well, let's say. So apparently the guy posted a statement on Facebook. Yeah, so it's true because he said that on Facebook. Who would doubt that it's not true if it's on Facebook? So he said he was compelled to do this act following Don Cherry's firing. And I think that the Don Cherry's firing was the thing that Ab was about to mention when I did interrupt him. So I will not continue to read on his post because I figure that he will do a better job explaining it than me reading what he was reading to explain it himself. So the picture is fascinating. The picture of the monument, our glorious dead, and he broke faith, is painted in blue, royal blue, I think. On the monument. So, the date 1939 and 1945, it's not really clear. I will guess it's that. So, apparently, the monument was built for the commemoration of the First World War, because that is the date that are in the front of the monument. On the left, there is the date of the World War II, which will be 1939 to 1945, and on the left, on the right column, there is the date 1915-1953, which I suppose is the Korean War. I was not aware that the Canadian participated in the Korean
War. Oh, yeah. We've been in every war, I think, since... We probably even went to the Boer War in South Africa. Canadians, we send a contingent because we always go under the British Army for the beginning of our existence, and then later we went on our own. I think in the 70s we stopped going under Mr.
But let's be honest.
Trudeau.
Yes, let's be honest. It's, of course, it's what I'm going to say. It's pretty cynical, but it's the best training ever if war is not a hoax.
Sure.
You know? Real firefight
is the best.
The military
is real. The military is real. The idea that nations are fighting each other That is the hoaxy part of it. But yeah, there's real military, there's real logistics, all that is real. And for men, young men, it's a great way to keep them in line, because yeah. The most dangerous people in society. One moment.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Most dangerous people in society are young men. They're the only ones
yes.
with the strength and the
yes.
testosterone
and you know what?
To threaten the establishment.
Yes, and you know what? Those are the ones that are sent to Europe currently.
Of course.
Interesting numbers.
Well, they're the only ones that could disrupt things.
Yes,
and
bring back money
chaos.
To the home country also.
Well, women don't riot the same way men do.
Yes.
They don't have the strength and they don't have the... they just don't have the biological makeup. I won't say genetic because that's BS.
Yes.
They don't have the biology to do it.
While you were away, I spoke a bit about the perpetrator of the defacing of the monument. But I interrupted
yes.
you earlier while you were speaking about Don Cherry, which is linked to the reason why the guy did what he did, supposedly. So maybe you could tell
yeah,
us
Don
more about
Cherry
that.
Yeah, Don Cherry was the guy I was talking about. He's a real
yes.
person. He's 85 years old. He's getting to that age when you probably should stop talking because your brain stops working. Clearly, but I think he's functional, but he's just starting to make less sense. But overall, he is a national icon. He's a Donald Trump figure that everyone listens to for 5 minutes a week. And he talks less and less about hockey and more about politics, which is fine. That's his. He's allowed to do that. It's part of his job as a commentator. They give him that space. He said last Saturday... Yeah, last Saturday, he basically got mad because fewer and fewer people are wearing poppies, which I think is a British invention where you stick a little red flower on your lapel in and around November 11th, Armistice Day, which is called Remembrance Day. And you're supposed to give money to the veterans, and then they give you a poppy.
It's a racket.
Pardon me?
It's a racket.
I don't call it a racket. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Of course, anyone that goes over and is in the military and is exposed to violence and shooting and things that probably do happen, I feel bad for them. So I don't mind paying to help them recover because we know they can't talk about what they really saw because it's not in line with what the media tells everyone happens, for instance, in Afghanistan. You know, most of them
yes.
are blown up by their own devices. And
yes, which is
general...
a shame because the government sent them
yeah.
there, and the government should be the one forking the cost of any type of treatment that is needed for those people to recover fully, if possible.
Yeah, well, the government is us. I never like to say, oh, the government. Well, the government is us, and we're the ones that pay for it, so it's really us. So yeah,
yes.
we do pay, but maybe we don't pay enough. I don't know. Maybe we don't pay enough, and they don't get enough treatment and medical assistance and life assistance and all that. But anyway, we have this thing called the poppy, where you're supposed to put on your lapel, and you give money every year, a small change into a box, which usually at a coffee shop, and... Every year, by the way, I didn't post it this year, but I think I posted it in the past. Every year, somebody steals a poppy box, we're told, at a coffee shop. Now, that box couldn't have more than a couple $100 worth of coins, but that's almost always the story. Poppy
yes,
box stolen.
Yes,
so,
I think that it's,
I think
it's
those
not
are fake
beyond
stories.
The
yeah,
it's,
but
it might be fake story,
you would
but
have
it's
to
not
have
beyond
some balls
the...
to walk up. You'd have to have some balls to walk up to a counter where there's always people and clerks to just take the box and leave. That's, first of all, you're not going to get rich doing it. And secondly,
no, but,
there's a lot of people
drug
around that might kick you in the
rich.
Head for doing it. Yeah, you could say they're the drug addicts because they're the kind of people that can wander in a coffee shop. But you know what? I think they'd be caught because there's lots of people around that would
yes.
just probably whack you in the side of the head
the
or just they. Yeah, they would just say, listen, you idiot, give it back and call the police or whack them over there. Because don't forget, guess where cops hang out? Donut shops. So if there isn't one in a donut shop, there's one on the way anyway. So give me a break on that. So these poppy shops, these poppy box hoax stories, I think, are also just to promote the sale of poppies, just remind people. But in general, I don't wear a poppy for a million reasons. Number one, they fall off. They're put on a simple pin, and if you just brush against them, they will fall off. And maybe I'm not going to find it, or I get tired of putting them back on. I mean, I got a million other reasons. I put my seatbelt on in my vehicle, and it grabs the poppy, and then it falls off again. So lots of people are just tired of poking their clothing and then themselves with these poppies, so they don't bother with them. Okay. So it's not that people don't care. Most people are aggravated by how badly designed they've been for 50 years, and no one ever wants to make a pin that won't come off.
It's for the people that really want to have one to buy many of those.
But the politicians, they start wearing them before Halloween in October. They were only supposed to be worn on the day of, but it became a competition to see how early on before Armistice Day could you put on your poppy. So even in October, people start wearing them to show, oh, look at me, I'm wearing a poppy, I'm thinking of the veterans, which is totally, it's totally stupid.
It's childish.
It's childish.
You know? Yes, it's childish.
But the main people, of course, that we get our cues from, at least in the old days, are on TV, so the newscasters that always put on their poppy, and they're the ones that reminded you, oh yeah, I guess I better get one, and all the public service started wearing them, and... Anyway, because he's 85 years old, Don Cherry was getting aggravated at people around him that don't wear poppies. And I guess if you still are concerned about that, yeah, I guess it would be annoying to see so many people not wearing poppies. Now, who does Don Cherry see most of the time? Well, he lives in an area of Toronto. Well, most of Toronto is now not white, so it's easy for him to say anyone who's non-white just got here, so he calls them you people, and that started a whole big immigration, white versus brown or black, newcomer versus oldcomer, native-born. It inflames all the divisions of society and gets everyone yapping about the divisions and what's right and cancel culture. Actually, that's a new phrase that I've only started hearing probably on the No Agenda show, where they talk about cancel culture. I kind of like it because it's another catchy phrase, like climate change, CC, 2 C's. So I kind of find it amusing. And I guess what it means is if you don't agree with somebody in the media, they should be fired or canceled. So I find it funny. But of course, it's stupid. But.
So what we will end up with at that rate is some kind of micromedia that are only addressed to a certain audience that is already agreeing with everything that will be said.
Well, basically they're after mainstream media, media that is publicly funded. They're just after those kind of spokespeople. And they're the ones that get targeted. So Don Cherry works for a private corporation. Well, he's contracted. So basically, they said he's fired. Or he's not coming back. But, of course, I'm sure he has a contract where he'll get paid anyway. But that was the whole story. But Canada, or Toronto anyway, has been talking about it for all week. And everyone who has an opinion is talking about it, and this alleged guy named Thomas Christian Zog, was that the name I heard you say as I was getting away? It, to me, Christian, that sounds like Thomas completely... Christian. What does Zog mean? Z-O-G? Isn't that something to do with Israel?
The Zionist Organized Government is a catch, is an abbreviation okay. used by the... how can I say that? The European past history enthusiast, let's say.
Okay. Well, I originally thought if this person isn't real, then it's a sim. And the name is definitely used. It's a made-up name, I'm sure, to aggravate people. We got the word Christian, because we can always attack Christians. And we got Zog, which brings up what you just said. And then, of course, as I followed the story a little more, which I'm not really interested in it, but from a fakeology point of view, I'm always interested in how they do these things. So then it appears that it is a real person using that name, not necessarily their name. And he's on Facebook, he's on Instagram, and he's blathering away about the whole immigration cherry debate. And so in my mind, if it's not a sim, then it's an agent. If it's not an agent, it's a LARPer, which is a live-action role-playing person that's playing a role of the disaffected white male, which would be you or me. You're a younger version of the white male, and I'm an older version of the white male. And we are the target for... We're basically the target for humiliation and for capitulation and for compensation, because we've done all these evil things to build up this very, very high functioning society that actually works pretty well. But we're the target.
Yes.
So he is playing the role perfectly, which, you know, if he is a real person and he really does feel this way, then to me he'd be quite an outlier. He's quite unique, because most people, most young people are pretty unmotivated and they're pretty out of it when it comes to the media. They don't pay attention at all. They play video games all day. If they're married, which is unlikely, then they probably don't have as much to do as, say, a father. When you're in your 30s, I think you should be a father at that point. Otherwise, you're going to have a hard time being part of society,
yes.
functional society. You know, you're just not responsible. You're just not contributing in the way that society needs. So if he's a disaffected, angry white guy, young white guy, then okay. Pretty strange, but if he is playing a role, the stereotypical guy that lives in his mother's basement, never grew up, hates Jews, hates the world, hates immigrants, then he's playing a role. That's a stereotypical role that I don't think really exists on an organized
yes.
way.
Yes, and let's say that we, the white male, are some nefarious entity that is organized to control the world in the way that we see fit, it is consciously or unconsciously. The thing is that if we are that good as doing this job, why even bother complaining? Just keep on going. Just keep on doing what we are doing. And if there is an opposition, let's combat that opposition and let's continue as we were doing. It worked for supposedly the whole history of mankind, allegedly the domination of the white male or anything. So if there is any truth to it, let's continue like that. There is no need to complain or to try to get the victim card or whatever. It makes no sense.
Yeah. Now, I don't think Don Cherry is part of any great conspiracy. He's not. I don't think he's paid to say controversial things. I think most of these things probably come from his head. And he does
yes.
speak for most people that don't like certain things.
Yes, and in the end, Don Cherry is not only speaking when he's on air. I think that the people in the production team, in the production meeting and whatever, are fairly aware of what is his frame of mind in the moment and what he's going to speak about.
And they know, and he does get ratings, so he does generate income because people tune in. The people that hate you, this goes for all media, they will tune in more than the people that like you.
That goes for psychologists also.
It goes for everything. The people that don't like you are the ones that listen the closest.
Yes.
That's why I've always said that love and hate are two sides of the same coin. They have the same passion for you. Indifference are the only people that you should be worried about because they're not listening and they don't care. So I think that the intelligence agencies that control our culture and they live to accentuate differences, they live to drive wedges on wedge issues, which can be a million different issues. And once they saw this story develop and get bigger, because I watched the show live last week, and it didn't bother me. I thought, oh, that's interesting. But it wasn't enough in my mind to even warrant a comment. So I just didn't think it was a big deal what he said. And I didn't think if I was going to make a divide and rule thing, I didn't think it would be big enough to blow up. But I think the people that monitor the media and help look for wedge issues and make them really big, they grabbed onto it really tight, and then they created this, what I think is a staged event, where you spray paint the cenotaph, which, by the way, is in downtown Toronto. It's in an area where there's probably always somebody around, so it's not like it's an out-of-the-way cemetery. It'd be pretty tricky to do the graffiti without being seen.
It means being filmed.
Videoed as well, yeah. We have a lot of cameras downtown. I don't know where they are. And, of course, everyone walks around with a camera.
But just by common people, exactly.
It would probably take, if you really spray painted it, it'd probably take them maybe 60 seconds to do all that, maybe. Not long.
Yes.
So but somebody would see him. But I just think the whole thing was engineered to help inflame the division between the so-called angry white guy and everyone else, which everyone else is an immigrant, a recent immigrant, and it's just a wedge issue to get people fighting while nefarious things and laws can be passed, which are more important to your life than this kind of issue.
Yes, and in the end, each and everyone is playing the victim card. It's sad.
His name is Agitprop, and Agitprop is agitating propaganda. So his name, to me, is concocted. His age, 33, is another signal. And any number divided by 11, to me, is a code for phony baloney, fake. 33 is the number one magic number. And, of course, the guy looks like he's in his 30s, so he could really be 33 if he's a real person. But the coincidences are too many to ignore. So the name, the age, the line from Flanders Field, which I guarantee no young people know that poem. Yeah, I think we're taught it in school, but I barely remember it. And for him to lift a line out of that poem and
I cannot make sense of it, but that sentence is not unfamiliar with me. I really don't know from where, to be honest. For some reason,
that's right from
when
the
I
poem.
Saw that phrase, it, yes, but that poem I could not have known of. It's impossible that I ever came across that poem as it is. I never read an English or Canadian or American poetry book.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
Well, it is a nice poem. I don't know if it came before the poppy symbol or after the poppy symbol. I think it has something to do with there are poppies in the fields of France, I think, where they buried soldiers from World War One. So I think he wrote it during the war, I don't know the history. I've forgotten it. I think we were taught it, but of course that was a long time ago. So that, to me,
I was more thinking that it was part of a meme or something like that. That was more recent, and that
I came across that. No. I don't think there's that. Well, I don't follow every meme, but I don't think so. I think it's. And again, for a 33-year-old to know all that, pretty rare person. Pretty rare. Pretty strange. I mean, most 33-year-olds walk around with facial hair and their baseball hat on backwards, and they play video games, and they like Drake, and they're not into media.
Okay.
They're not into.
You get me on the facial hair.
They're not into
but I don't wear
issues.
Baseball cap.
Guaranteed, unless they're in the military or were in the military, they don't follow the pop. They probably don't wear a poppy. So for him, he is such a stereotypical invented person that he's just too full of stereotypes to be real, is my idea. But can you play? Is he on YouTube yet? Because I'm sure someone has moved his Instagram video onto YouTube. Because, of course, the other thing is he has a manifesto on Facebook. And manifestos are another classic element of an invented person. I don't even have a manifesto. You know, and I think about all these issues every day. I'm not into manifestos. That is something that is created by the intelligence agencies that create these phony people. And they put every stereotypical thought of the average person into these manifestos to get them riled up. And they literally don't miss anything when they put them in.
Yes.
So the idea that the guy has a manifesto, completely unbelievable. People don't have manifestos. Now, just give me a minute, and I don't want to miss anything, so just stay quiet for a minute if you don't mind, so I don't miss what you have to say.
Yes. So, Parkdale, High Park is in Toronto, because the thing is that when I want to type the name Thomas Christian Zog on YouTube, I came across Swiss people, because Zog is a common name in Swiss, and apparently I was not aware that it was a name in that orthograph of the name, but of that spelling. But anyway, when you type Thomas Christian Zog Toronto, you came across different thing about Thomas Zog. I don't know if that's the same guy. So let's listen to 3 minutes of this Thomas Zog on a political debate. Yes, I figure that it might be interesting to have a bit more of background of the guy.
Welcome back to the local campaign. For the next hour, you'll have a chance to question the candidates from Parkdale High Park. Here is, first of all, a quick look at the riding. The riding extends from the Canadian Pacific Railway line in the north to Lake Ontario in the south. The Humber River is the in the west to the Canadian National Exhibition Grounds in the east. That's the territory. In the studio to hear from in Parkdale High Park, and he is Thomas Zog, representing the People's Political Party. Thomas, please tell us a bit about yourself and your party and where you'd like to take the
problem. Oh, you found somebody. Wow.
Right. Currently, I'm operations manager of a custom millwork shop in Mississauga. I like to busk at Dundas Square for fun. It's pretty good hobby. Sorry. our party is a global grassroots party. We have no central leadership. If you've heard of Anonymous, we are synonymous with Anonymous. We are calling for an October 15th demonstration on Bay Street. We are going to be occupying Bay Street for a series of weeks until we are able to get our banking sector out of fractional reserve banking. You know, we've heard all candidates tonight talking about the deficit, and that's one of the hugest issues that's causing these deficits is the fact that new money is created at interest, and it creates a rabbit hole that is impossible to get out of. Now, some of the things that we want to do for the province is we want to get the spending under control. We want to have a provincial-wide labor force to build infrastructure instead of privatizing to small companies. We want to subsidize hospitals directly and move money away from OHIP and directly into hospitals, which was Tommy Douglas's original vision.
So the idea would be go directly from government, as it were, directly to the hospital.
Correct.
All right. What would happen to OHIP then?
Well, you'd get rid of it. You'd get rid of it. And the money that you would save on all the wages for OHIP employees, which are actually quite exorbitant, would go a long way to getting more health care services that we desperately need. Part of the funding strategy is to ban public sector unions. If you take a look, government sector jobs are some of the highest paying jobs in this economy. And that's just mathematically unsustainable. Mm-hmm. We also want to do an MPP wage reduction, and we want to do this in a smart way. We want to make the MPP's wage the median household income of their riding, and it puts a direct incentive on the MPP improving all constituents' economic situation. Basically, we do want to cut down on the middlemen in between taxpayers and the service providers that we desperately need. I know I only have very
just a few more seconds. One more good idea from you, please.
We want to take on police corruption. If you wear a badge and you dishonor it, you shouldn't be able to hide behind it when it's time for consequences. There's a lot of people that I talk to in the riding that have been abused by the police.
Thomas, thank you very much. Thank you for coming in, talking about the People's Political Party. That's it for now.
Wow. Okay, well, see?
That was the guy 8 years ago. There are a lot of, how can I say that, more recent content about the guy, but it's mostly video of the guy himself in front of a camera speaking about different... I think that it was more interesting to get the guy speaking with an interlocutor, someone that was directing him and asking him questions.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. Hey, I'm bad enough to say maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it is a real person. You found 8 years ago footage, so... Maybe they found the perfect guy to help drive this wedge issue. It's possible,
yes,
but boy, things sure line up. I mean, that's amazing if all these things line up.
Yes, but it's strange in the sense that if the guy is so concerned with what is his angle these days? He's supposed to be a right-wing or a left-wing guy?
Well, that would be libertarian or right-wing, what I just heard. So if you said that 8 years ago, he would have been 25. Does he look 25 in the video?
At least he's making an effort to look 25 because he has the look, let's say.
All right, well, hey.
But,
I guess there are people like that, but it's pretty coincidental that all these things add up. But I'm not going to ever
that,
say I'm always right, but that's amazing.
Yes. I will put on the show note... a more recent video, the thing is that the guy does not really look to be 33. He looks a bit younger, but I did not listen to it. And yes, like I said, it's mainly the guy in front of a camera speaking about some topic, like trading the Canadian nightmare for the American dream.
That's the name of the video?
Yes.
Well, that was
so
a pretty good video.
So 3 months ago, he posted a short one. Yes, he's trying
did
to...
You
like
his,
his
did you find his latest rant that was on Instagram? I don't think we can... I don't know if we can play an Instagram video using the Fred boat. I think you might be able to, I'm not sure. I put a link to the Instagram video in the post.
Okay. So let me
maybe
get to
Fred Bolt can
there.
Play it. I don't
Fred
think Trip Bot can
to.
Play it, but
I don't think so either, but... okay, and I was already on the page, but evidently I had to reload it. Yes, I'm looking for it.
Yeah.
But like I said, they added, they added the World War II and the Korean War part on the monument.
Sorry, what did they add? Who added what? Sorry, I missed that.
The dates of the end of World War II and Korean War were added after the fact to the monument. The monument was clearly intended for World War I in the beginning.
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah, that's possible. Yeah, that makes sense. They probably got the Afghanistan conflict on there, too.
Yes.
Because we were told we lost over 100 Canadian soldiers. I think it was a pretty interesting number of soldiers that they settled upon.
Yes, so the thing is that the Fredbot does not have the ability to play an audio of the Instagram page, but...
Okay.
But because there is always a but, and technology allows us to do wonderful things, I can use another cell phone to go on the fakeologist.com page, then play the link into my microphone, and I think that it might work that way.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let everyone know, Jairus doesn't even have a computer. He does all his audios and all his playing from his phone, which at the best of time, a phone is a real nuisance to use to play stuff. So good on Jairus for really working and doing an effort to do all this production on a phone, which is just not a great device for any of this, but you do it. So anyone who says they don't have the equipment, just look at Jairus. He's operating on a shoestring. And, of course, if you want to support Jairus...
Yes. But at this point, I don't think that I will be able to do it on...
/Friday Audio Chat. Is that right? Patreon.com/Friday Audio Chat if you want to support Jairus.
Yes, that's exact. So let's try it like that. And if you think that it's not possible to hear it that way, I will stop playing it, but I know on the page and I will play the video.
All right.
Now is fairly easily removed. It does not disrespect a war memorial to momentarily affix a line from a poem written by a man whose grave is on many others as part of that stone. It honors their memory to make the comment. They did not die for us to become this type of mentally straitjacketed society, unable to speak freely or share one's view. You people, the perpetually offended, hypersensitive adult children, are ruining our society. And that's why I painted the cenotaph.
So, was it possible to hear?
Oh, that was fine. That was great. Excellent. That was great. That was louder than any audio. So, yeah, that was really good. And, you know, Here's the funny thing. Before I got into fakeology, I was always a right-wing person. I had a right-wing blog. And it's gone now, of course, because I don't really stick. I'm not really into that left-right paradigm anymore. But I haven't changed my values in any way. And I kind of agree with the guy. So that's the sad part. I agree with just about everything he said there.
Yes.
And if he's
until
not controlled,
the point he said,
well, yeah,
that's why I defaced the monument, because that's the part that makes no sense.
Well, it got him attention, but it's definitely not the right thing to do. But if he's not controlled, then okay, well, he's just an anomaly that... I guess could be organic, but...
Yes, but if this guy ever had any political ambition, which seems to be the case at one point, defacing the monument just killed it off forever, because he will always be the guy that painted the war monument.
Yeah, well, I don't know if that would really, in this day and age, be held against him for too long. He's definitely a fringe view, though, and he's obviously not going to be affiliated with any party that could get him into power. So that's interesting, but you've done more research than I have, so I give you credit. And
Well, it was easy. It's just finding the guy YouTube channel, then taking the Instagram link you posted and play the video on another cell phone.
No, it's very well done. Maybe find his Facebook page. I didn't look for that either, so I want to see.
The thing is that I don't have Facebook, so I cannot access his Facebook page. But the Thomas Chok Manifesto might be easy to find. And we do have the possibility to use text-to-speech to read it.
Oh, very good. Just give me 2 minutes.
Manifesto. So, yes. Thomas Zog Manifesto, Toronto, of course, because if you type Thomas Zog, you will be directed to some Swiss individual if you don't use that proxy or VPN, which I don't use. Thomas Zog, Facebook, class of 2006, acting for... He seems to be a fan of the yellow scarf, at least at one point he was. Okay, so a few pictures, but couldn't this... imbecile put his manifesto on the first thing that you see on Facebook without having the upper possibility to access his page itself. Evidently, no. This guy needs to work on his promotion skills. And if he has a government agency or some communication agency behind him, those guys are doing a shitty job at that. Let me tell you that. Incredible, but let's try something read on the original site, because of course each and everyone will link you to another site. Link me to the damn manifesto, that's all I ask.
Did you find it?
I'm still looking for it, because the thing is that I don't have any access to Facebook, so I will have to find it on another source.
Yeah.
Because like I said, the guy is lacking the promotion skill to put this manifesto on the first thing you see when you click his name on Facebook.
Yes.
But he's an actor, he's an how can I say that? Stand-up comedian, apparently. At least that's
is
what
he
he's
really?
Claiming.
What?
On his, that's what he's claiming.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you have the possibility to
see
it, but there is a flag. There is a flag on his Facebook page, front page, because that's the only thing I can access.
Is it a
But he seems to be linked
flag?
With Russia for some reason.
Russia? Wow.
I will send you the screen cap I can get. It was in 2006 at the Toronto Film School, acting for film, television, and theater. So we already got that. So everything is going to be posted right now in the live stream show notes.
So if he really believes this stuff, that's one thing. But he could be a LARPer. He could easily
I
be
think so.
A LARPer, because let's face it, LARPers are B and C grade actors, which is most people. They are actors. They are of B or C level. They don't get real paid work. So there is work in LARPing. If you don't know what LARPing is, those are live-action role players that take part in drills that are switched over into real media events, which are hyper-realistic drills portrayed as real. So they need actors to be the spokespeople for these events. So obviously...
Yes.
I wouldn't be a good actor because I don't have any training, so I would probably screw up my lines, and I would probably not be able to cry, and I would probably really not get the message across properly in the 10 or 20 seconds you have to make a sound bite because I don't have training. But if I had some training in stand-up comedian, that means you're able to go out in front of people and say things and not start laughing or not start betraying the idea that you're just an actor.
Yeah.
So the idea that
yes,
this
true.
Guy has training, that makes him a great candidate for LARPing. And I think
yes.
LARPing is a paid gig. You get paid for it. Probably not Tom Cruise money, but you get paid. And everyone's got to eat. I say this every time. All these people in the conspiracy community, how do they eat? Because last time I looked, you need money to pay for food. So you got to do something.
Yes. So this guy has also a page on a site named opencomedy.com. I will also post the link on the show notes. But Zog has a charismatic personality and a bizarre personal history that he bears on stage with a refreshing boldness. So even they say that he has a bizarre personal history. And we can book this guy. So if you are in Toronto, you can book this guy to have a discussion with him. Even get him on fakeologist.com. Because apparently he's available as an entertainer.
I'd have to pay for it. Can we do a... how much do you think... What's his appearance fee?
Excellent question. Everything is on opencomedy.com, Thomas Zog. I don't know if the rate is published as boldly on the website, but beware that it can be nerve-wracking for the timid booker. So,
really? That's what it says?
Yes. He was in the People's Political Party in Canada.
Well, we just had a new party in the last election called the People's... It's PPC, the People's Political... I forget.
It's, yes, but
I
don't
hate when names are too hard to remember.
But he made 0.14% in an election.
Was he in the last election?
No, in 2011.
Okay. I would have thought so. With his stance, he would have been in the PPC, which is the People's Popular... Oh, man, I can't remember it. Anyway.
Like I said, I'm working on the just what I type on Google is Thomas Zog Manifesto Toronto, and I'm reading from what I get as a result. And after that, it's all about the cenotaph and all that is related.
Yeah.
So it's,
well, I think you've done enough. I think we've probably talked about this enough. I don't think anyone who's still listening is not going to be interested anymore, because it seems like he's a real person that just got himself in front of the camera and is helping with this wedge issue. So if everything
yes.
is as it seems, then he certainly could be manufactured on the surface, but it sounds like he's fairly organic, which would make him
the
worst LARPer. Yeah, exactly. That's right. That's what I meant to say.
Yes.
But you did.
But I think that we did a great job at getting to the bottom of that story. But to everyone listening, be aware that each and every search I made about the name Thomas Zog is polluted by the fact that it's a common family surname in Switzerland. So someone that is not in Switzerland may have a different result by using Google.
Sorry, his name is a common last name?
In Switzerland, yes. So, but I was not aware of the orthograph with the A and the U. I won't know that the name existed with the O, but apparently there is a lot of Thomas Zog with an A and a U in Switzerland.
I've never heard the name ever. Wow, that's amazing.
And the fact is that the only mention of the middle name Christian is on the news article about the cenotaph. The earlier material always mentioned him as only Thomas Zog, not Thomas Christian, so for some reason.
Yeah.
So it might
is
be
that,
also
that German?
The guy had a... Yes,
is that a
probably.
German name, do you think? Yeah.
Probably. But Google
I'm surprised they didn't try
that.
And link him to neo-Nazis or white supremacists. I'm waiting for that.
So, Ancestry.com is telling me that the Zog name is Swiss-German from an old High German personal name Zugo, perhaps related in meaning to ziehen, to pull.
Wow. I couldn't have got a better researcher on this guy. A guy from Switzerland researching that name.
Yes. Oh, and there is not that many famous people with the name Zog. But we had a... How can I say that? A manager for the football team. The soccer team, you would say, but we say football. That's the only Zog that is... But I did not remember that guy, but the name is not that interesting. But it's a Swiss-German name, of all places. So probably this guy has some Swiss heritage somehow, if the name is real, which seemed to be the case. So this guy
is
with a Swiss last name.
Well, he fits the profile of the disaffected white male. There's no doubt about that. No doubt about it. So if he's not a useful idiot and he's not a paid agent, if he's not a paid agent, he could be a useful idiot to this debate. I'm not saying he's an idiot, but a useful idiot just means that you're doing the divide and rule work and you're doing a good job of it.
Yes. I figure that
was pretty good
deconstruction.
Case.
Yes, but it was wrong that we came upon this guy. Yes, that's right. That's right. But you did. in the end, you did.
I send a dollar your way every month, and I guess that means you get about 80 cents, because Patreon takes their massive cut. But if that's what it takes to get people... for social proof to see others doing it, then Patreon is what we're using. So, help Jairus out, because I don't think Jairus is a rich man. And he's very passionate about the site. So if 100 people sent Jairus a dollar, I'd rather you send Jairus money than me, because Jairus needs it more than me. So send Jairus a dollar a month if you want to keep hearing these audios. This is the new media. It's user-supported and not advertiser-friendly media. Nobody would associate with us, I'm sure. So if you want to keep hearing stuff every week, and I know there's a few hundred people that download, that doesn't mean they listen to it, but it means it's downloaded. And I haven't checked the statistics lately, but go to the go to Patreon and type Friday Audio Chat. And find Jairus and send a dollar, which is less than a cup of coffee here. It's probably a seventh of what a Starbucks coffee costs, or maybe a fifth. Not much money at all. And a dollar a month, you'd never miss the dollar. But Jairus would definitely notice it if 100 people did it.
Yes, and I really like this discussion we had, because we did go to the bottom of something that was posted on the main site, and that is excellent.
Yeah, and if it's not fakery, well, that's what research is all about. We're trying to figure out what's real and what's fake, and we don't know. Nobody sends us a list of the real events and the fake events, so we're just trying to figure it out. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yes.
The main thing is we question the hell out of the media.
Yes. No new site is willing to publish the manifesto as it is.
Well, this is a news site, so we got to find it.
Okay. I find parts of it that I will copy and put in the text-to-speech.
Oh, good. On-the-fly research, this is what this is.
So, I need now to remember what is the command for the text-to-speech, but soon I found that on me neither. That is not a feature I use commonly, but
Gaia used it all the time.
Yes.
And there's so different voices on the too.
Yes, it's so sad that I don't know. Yes, that's what I am doing.
Yeah, check the pins. That's why I don't want too many pins so you can find pins. The important pins.
Plus.
But there is a help button. What is it? Plus help?
Plus audio help. I cannot remember for the life of me how to do it.
Well, it's got to be in there under commands and help.
Yes, it got to be there. Translate, image search, you want. It's possible that there is absolutely nothing for the text to speech. Oh, it's a shame. It's a shame. But
go through the past commands. I'm sure you'll be able to see what Gaia did.
Yes. Exactly. I now get to look for the Gaia image, his avatar, let's say. Apparently he was not using that feature that much in the end.
No?
TS.
We have a couple bots that are on the Fakeologist Discord. One of them was done by Tryptamine, who's flown the coop. He's gone, but he left his bot, which is nice. And there's two audio bots. One is activated with a plus sign, and one is activated with a minus sign. Actually, there's three bots. I think one is activated with an exclamation point, I think. And
yes.
The plus and the minus. The plus, is the plus one the one with the most features? The minus one is just an audio bot. So they actually could play at the same time, which is fun. And if you don't like that, we have Fred Boat. And how is Fred Boat activated?
Fred Boat is activated by a symbol. Yes, I don't know the name of that symbol, but...
Semicolon, right? It's a dot and semicolon. A comma underneath. Okay. I think he's a semicolon. So I don't know if Fred Boat does more things. It does different things. It can play from SoundCloud. I'm not sure.
You can play from Vimeo that I am sure of and all
Vimeo,
the other
yeah.
ones. But this main feature that I am using is for Vimeo. But mainly when the other bots is refusing to play YouTube. Which happened for some reason. At one point, they might be changing something in the code and takes a while for people to be able
yeah,
to catch
YouTube
up on it and make something.
YouTube is always messing with the code. YouTube's always screwing around.
Yes, but it makes sense. It makes sense because of the massive amount of new device and setting and everything they need to keep track of and adapt.
No, they're trying to keep people from using YouTube. From the back door, so they're changing everything all the time. For instance, they really want to stop people that rip music from YouTube. They don't, but the recording industry does, because if you can just grab the audio without watching an ad, they don't make any money.
Yes.
So they're shutting down all the ripping services where they grab the audio and save it.
Yes, and in the end, it's hopeless to go through all those massive amount of posts just to find something that I can totally read on the air. So, what Don Cherry said was not racist, hateful, or directed at immigrants, the Facebook post states. we have gotten to a strange place in our society when a beloved sport broadcaster, known for making fiery yet thoughtful rants, get fired for encouraging the people in the GTA, the Greater Toronto Area, I think, the people in the GTA to celebrate and participate by referencing a National Day of Remembrance over fallen, and continuing the tradition of buying and wearing a puppy. And then he continues, there is a small minority of people on the internet and in the media who carry far too much power and sway in the minds of our politicians. People that are cheering on the implementation of the antithesis to the Canadian identity, draconian speech policing, and a mass silencing of anything they deem objectionable. He then continues, this cancel culture has gotten off of hand, and I fear it's the beachhead for a cultural shift into an authoritarian communist state. This is not the future the men who fought and died in the battle inscribed on that monument died for. We have broken faith with their noble sacrifice, and we need to acknowledge that in order to start correcting that as the people of the Greater Toronto Area. And then, in the end, the soldier did not die for they did not die for us to become this type of mentally straight-jacketed society, unable to speak freely or share one's view. You people, the perpetually offended, hypersensitive adult children, are ruining our society, and that's why I prepended the Senate. End quote.
All right. You could have just put a sign up. I was thinking about that.
Yes.
That would have been okay. Right. I don't think you'd get arrested for that. Just drive a stake into the ground with a big sign. Start a podcast. Do a YouTube rant.
No, YouTube might put him off. I say start a podcast and try to use the way that you can use, because there is always a way to get yourself accessible one way or the other. There are podcasts that say horrible fascistic thing and they are still existing to this day without any issue, and it continues on a weekly basis. So I figure that this view of this guy are not that extreme. So if he were to have a podcast, he will probably not be censored in any way.
Well, the internet as a whole does not have a censor. There is no... The biggest method of censorship on the internet is the infinite possibility in infinite number of websites. So that's a cell.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
You don't have free will. You have the appearance of free will.
The infinite number of sites is itself a form of censorship, because it's very hard to find these sites, and that's why Google was created, to index the sites and make the search actually work. Because the search before Google was always really hit and miss. Really hard to find sites, of course.
Yes.
I can scream all kinds of terrible things on the internet, but if nobody's listening, do I really make a sound? And the answer, of course, is not really. If no one's listening, then it may as well not exist.
Yes, it's the same thing. It's exactly the same thing. But that's why people are so keen on staying on YouTube and refraining themselves from speaking about certain topics just to stay alive on YouTube. Because that's the way to reach people. And let's be honest, that's the way to make money also, sadly.
Well, I don't know really. Give me 2 minutes.
Yes. So interesting guy, this Thomas Zog. He seems to have wanted to go the political route at one point. Then the few things we can gather from this discussion we just have, that apparently the guy chose to more go on the activist way, which is kind of, let's say, the modern way of doing politics. But let's be fair also, I don't really believe in any fair election, but if you were to see the number that this guy did on an election he was participating, it's clear that it was not bound to be a success, so I can totally consider that this guy chose leave the classic politics and make himself more of an activist, an internet activist. But yes, like I said, this guy, last video that were 2 to 3 months old, were mostly this guy filming himself on an interior setting, not interacting with everyone on the street, doing some activism or whatever. So as far as I know, not that that interesting of a guy, but yes, he can be an unhinged guy that decided to deface a monument for some political reason. So yes, he was something more like a libertarian earlier in his political career, let's say. But after that, it was clear that this guy was more on the right, let's say. I did not watch each and every one of his videos. The only material I get about him is what I just play on air and what I read
out,
which was pretty difficult.
Yeah, I think we've done enough. I think we've done enough on that. So maybe we have a real event, and we don't know. But I think we've done enough. I think most Canadians are sick of the story now. I know I'm pretty much done with it. Well, except tonight, because now we have to see who fills Don Cherry's slot on the Television, and that's a big thing, and I don't think anyone is really watching anymore. Sports, even live sports, is in severe decline on the Television as more people don't care and or are distracted by a million other entertainment devices now. So the story and his rants become less and less relevant.
The thing is that the impression I get, at least from your view in Switzerland, is that the kids might not be watching the whole game, but they are sure watching a lot of replays and videos and everything.
Yeah, the clips.
Football.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Soccer games, as you say.
Yes. Yeah, they,
and
yes,
they are still bothering their parents to get the last garment and the last the shirts and everything. So at least that aspect is well alive, the marketing side of it.
I agree there. I agree. Yeah, it's it's consumed in tiny bites off the internet, off Twitter, off Instagram, off YouTube, TikTok. I'm not on. Are you on TikTok?
No. Not on any social media apart from this.
Oh, okay. I'm on everything now. I don't do anything on Instagram really, but definitely on Twitter. And if anyone wants to check my Twitter feed, it's on the right side of fakeologist.com. I do lots of replying and liking, and too bad you can't do any hating. You need a hate button on there. But I engage on Twitter, and I find it's a waste of energy because, of course, Twitter owns the content, and they can flush it down the toilet any time, so it's not a really great way to archive your stuff, but I often will put it on my website at the same time, so if I do get flushed, then it'll still be somewhere. Not that it will be that interesting to the average person, but I do waste a lot of time there.
Yes, Twitter is an interesting thing, but I don't really, never used it. But I consider making an account there just for the sake of being able to consult some things and whatever. Same with Instagram in the end, and same that, for example, the limitation I just had on Facebook, because I could not really access the page of this Thomas Zog character. But I never did it, for some reason.
No, I'm not on Facebook too much. There's a couple of things I'm interested in that force me to go to Facebook. Some, because Facebook gets in everything, internet, for instance, they have forums and live streams, and you can't watch them unless you sign up. But I use a phony name on Facebook, so I have a few Facebook accounts, but they don't have anything on them. But you need an account to access the other people's stuff. It's not a public site in any way. It's gate. There's obviously gate kept.
Yes.
Even Fakeologists, you don't need to log in to look at it. But you do need to log in to post. But on Facebook, a lot of the times, or many times, you got to log in to see anything on there.
Yes, there is only so much content that one can put forward without having people log in. And so that's why I was saying that this guy had the poor marketing skill, because my manifesto would have been the first thing people see when they came to the Facebook front page without logging in, let's say.
Yeah, but how many people are like us that would research him?
Not that much.
You probably count
but
them
we
on,
did it.
Probably count them on one hand.
Yes, but we did it, and it's there for each and everyone to listen to and make their opinion on this guy.
Yeah, that's true. By the way, I know you, anyone who does an audio chat, I usually post it with the person's name who does the audio chat, because I don't listen to it until later. And it's not a good way to find audio chats. I think audio chats should have some keywords and some proper titles. And I know I don't do that, but if anyone wants to suggest a title to an audio chat, like you, Jairus, I will change it on the headline so people can find it.
Yes, we did that with Gaia at one point with the Friday audio chat, giving title, and everything is linked on the Fakeopedia page, at least for the Friday audio chat. There at least there is a good wealth of information on the topics and the people that were there and everything. So at least there is that way that exists, that is fakeologies.com/fakeopedia, and then you can find on the Friday audio chat page some information. Of course, it's not exhaustive because there is not each and every audio chat, and there is not the one that I did not or Gaia did not participate in, but there is a lot of those, let's say, that are referenced by topic and everything.
Okay, good.
So that is a start, and I really need also to take the time to update the FRAC page for the Fakeopedia. That is something I will take some time to do also.
Yeah, it takes energy, it takes time, it's a lot of effort, and for small benefit.
Yes.
Now, normally at this time we're on the fartpodcast.com, fartpodcast.com.
Yes.
But they're doing it some other time, maybe Sunday, I think, which is not,
yes.
Maybe, I don't know. I think Sunday night is tomorrow morning for me. I'm not sure.
Yes, I tried to get the fart guys with us, but to no avail. I think that since they knew that they were not recording, they did take some other engagement.
No, it's okay. We don't need them here. They have their own show, so I don't mind
yes.
if they drop in, but they
yes.
are Australian-centric. Which means most people here have no idea what's going on in Australia. Therefore, it's hard to relate to. I like hearing about Australia. A warm version of Canada, that their authoritarian state seems more advanced than Canada. And other than that, the guys are entertaining, to say the least.
Yes, it's a great listen, and it's always a pleasure when they are not recording to have them with us on the Saturday morning. But, yes, it's good as it is, and I really like that we got to the bottom, let's say, of that specific story.
Yeah.
Because my
first
inclination was to think that it was a total fabrication. Apparently, it's not the case.
Doesn't seem like it, but we could call Thomas Dog and say, are you a LARPer? Just answer the question, yes or no. Are you paid to do... This is agitprop. It's agitating propaganda. That's what it is. It's to rile people up and divide people, to inflame wedges in between people, and turn people against each other. That's the only purpose of it.
Yes, and it's probably working in a magnificent way. But since we are not watching that much mainstream media or are so much in tune with the flavor of the day, it might take some time since we notice the first effect in the real world, let's say.
Yes. Let's move on to another fakeologist topic. Do you have any yourself, or maybe the blog has something there?
I'm watching at the blog as we speak. So yes, that one was fairly interesting, but we did get to the bottom of it. So the first fake circumcision story.
Oh, yeah. See, I think this is a fake story, and Gaia number two, the guy that doesn't like fakeologists, took me to task on it, and,
Jesus, what are you doing?
I listed, go ahead, read a bit of the story if you want.
Yes. So, why the link is not open? Okay. Then it's good. So the story is about the newborn. 22 day for the number fanatic. 22 day old. Year old, I was about to say. 22 day old baby that bled to death from a circumcision gone horribly wrong. And doubt. I don't know, there is no real picture of the baby itself, but it's irrelevant anyway. But the parents say the regulator who handled their complaint have shed little light on what led to the child's death, on how or to prevent similar tragedies in the future. They said they did not even want the newborn circumcised. Okay, but were persuaded to do so by a family physician. I don't know. The thing is that what is the National Post? Firstly, what is the interest of
the National Post? I would call the National Post the National Zionist Post. It's a paper that's never made any money. There's no reason for it to exist other than to print propaganda. And it was started by Conrad Black, who obviously was a WASP, a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, establishment, Toronto establishment type, who has lots of money. He wanted another Canadian national newspaper that was more right-wing, and this was quite a while ago now, and he paid a lot of columnists a lot of money for a long time, and they never made a dime on the newspaper. And as far as I know, you're not allowed to operate a business at a loss for more than a reasonable amount of time before it would be considered a tax dodge where you put other money into it to hide income. And I don't think it's legal, but obviously.
Yes, so this specific media
it's mainly Zionist. Stories, mainly Zionist, pro-Israel, pro-terrorism stories where they're the first ones to report on any quote-unquote Canadian terrorism. So they use the model that it's just an agitprop outlet. There's no other way to describe it. They have no more columnists. They don't pay anyone. So I would say it's used for the psyops of the day. Whatever they are. I told you many times, Canada has some of the crummiest ones. They're very underdeveloped stories. They're not interesting. And they're the first on the scene to promote it.
Okay, so in 2000, this specific media was sold, the National Post was sold to CanWest Global in 2000. Half of it was sold to CanWest Global. And CanWest Global is a Canadian media operation in radio, television, and publishing. And it was replaced by another, by Post Media Network. Since 2010, it is now called Post Media Network. Postmedia Network Canada Corporation is the full name. Before it was CanWest, and now it's Postmedia, and those are the people that own this specific newspaper.
Yeah.
So those are the ones that are financially backing this paper, at least since 2001. But the thing is that it was founded in 1998, so it was short-lived, let's say, as a totally independent media, if it was ever.
Yeah, well, it was owned by a zillionaire, and I think he was sort of a corporate raider type who bought companies and then sold their assets and then sold the company.
So
basically, it's a form of corporate theft. It's a form of corporate theft, I believe. That's what it really should be called.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I will give you a bit of backstory for everyone listening on Conrad Black. Conrad Moffat Black, Baron Black of Cross Harbor, born the August 25 of 1944, is a Canadian-born British former newspaper publisher and author. Black controlled Hollinger International, once the world's third largest English language newspaper empire, which published the Daily Telegraph in UK, the Chicago Sun-Times in the US, and the Jerusalem Post in Israel, and the National Post in Canada.
Right.
And he's a member of the House of the Lords since 2002, and he's on a leave of absence since 2012.
Yeah. He went to jail as well for violating United States securities laws. I don't remember exactly. It was a very strange story. He eventually went to jail.
If you want to encourage more audios like these, please go to fakeologist.com and click the Patreon button under the Donate section. For $1.19 a month, you can call yourself a verified listener, and for $9.11 a month, a benefactor who will get a shout out every time Ab does a show. Thank you for your support.
Yeah, that bumper doesn't sound too good. I have to fix that one day. But I get
Patreon. Yes, he was pardoned by Donald Trump in 2019. He only served, allegedly, the jail 29 months.
Give me a sec.
He also served a bit of time in prison in 2012. That was the time he was in jail, apparently. To pay Hollinger, which was his former company, $6.1 million, plus $125,000 in fine. Interesting character, to say the least. He was born in Montreal. Blah, blah, blah. His father, a chartered accountant, became the president of Canadian Breweries Limited. Okay. Conrad Blackmother was the former Jane Elizabeth Riley, a daughter of Conrad Stephenson Riley, whose father founded the Great Westlife Insurance Company, and a great-granddaughter of an early founder of the Daily Telegraph. His father was a shareholder in the Daily Telegraph. So, press magnate, let's say. Interesting character, to say the least. So that is the newspaper that published this first fake circumcision story, to give a bit of background on it. Always interesting to know from which source we are drinking, let's say. The article is written by a guy named Tom Blackwell. It was published on October 25, okay. Updated on the 27th. The picture of the baby is grainy. There is no real indication that it's said baby. Very, very difficult. Do the Pediatric Society said in a recent report that death from bleeding caused by circumcision is extremely rare, though it's not completely unheard of. A 5-week-old British Columbia baby bled to death after being circumcised in 2003.
Okay. Right, here we go, yeah. I put my reasons why I think it's a phony story. It's an old story, by the way, and I found the story on Twitter, this is why I stay on Twitter, because a lot of people, the absolute easiest way to say you like a story or publish a story that you agree with is just by retweeting it. And Cody, who's an Intactivist who you've brought to the site, or was on the site before, I can't remember.
He was before. I think that he was there even before me.
Okay. So he retweeted this story. And now it's an old story from a few years ago, but by all accounts, I think it's a fake story. Why? I listed the reasons. 22 is a hoax code. It's a multiple of 11, and most hoaxes are multiples of 11. So 11 is the magic number, 22, 33, 44, 50, etc. You get the idea. There's no officials named in the story. And you can't say that a college of physicians said something. An entity doesn't say anything. They have spokesholes that do the talking. They have to give their names. Because if you have to question whether they said it, you have to be able to call the person. So they have to give their name. So an entity, the Toronto Police, does not say things. Because it's not a person with a voice. We need a person's name of who is speaking on behalf of the organization. So when you read a story that the College of Physicians says, no, that's not, you can make that up. Because an entity doesn't speak. People speak. So you need a name. So there's no names in the story at all, including the doctor's name. Don't you think if a doctor did something unethical, we should have his name if the public is paying his salary? Yes. Yes, we need his name. And if he is guilty of something wrong or an impropriety, we need his name. If he's exonerated and we've found to have done nothing wrong, then we need his name. So we can speak freely and clear his name.
Yes. But to be honest, with the indication given on that National Post article, it will probably take me less than 20 minutes to discover the name of the physician that persuaded them to have the circumcision. It might not be the same person that performed the circumcision, though. But having the name of those persons, the place that they live, and the fact that they seem to be keen on social media because there is some picture of them, and the name is not that common in Canada, it would be possible to discover the name of the family physician.
Maybe. Well, I still think it's a pony story.
Iranian, so I figure that it's, yes, if there is any truth to the story, of course. But I mean, if someone is so interested in making the research in that story, just taking the National Post article will make it pretty easy to find the name of the physician.
Yeah. Yes. But Gaia took me to task on it, saying I don't do enough research and I don't put enough explanation in. And my answer to that is Fakeologist and its posts, its blog posts, are a cumulative effort. In other words, I don't explain every single phony story to the nth degree. Because if you are following the blog long enough and read my implications and ideas, you'll know why I post certain stories that I think are fake. And I don't have the time to explain every detail of every post every time. So therefore, you're going to have to rely on past posts to get an idea of why I think something is fake. So I have numerology, I have lack of real contacts, I have many, many things that I use. But the main one, of course, is the mainstream media makes up stories or is given stories by the intelligence agencies. And that's the main reason that the blog exists and I put up these stories. That's the main idea.
Yes. And that's a great way to put something forward, and then we can try to research it, discuss it like we are doing right now, which is the main interest of those posts, for me at least. Is that the case? You brought my attention to something, we are there, we are live, we can research it, try to give a bit of backstory on it if possible, and that's the way it is.
Now, it's interesting because I don't think circumcision is really a fakeologist topic, but I let it in because I like you, and you like the topic, and I'm always trying to figure out how it's fakeologist related. So finally we have a story that ties the two together pretty well, and there's a good chance that fakeology is being used in the circumcision debate, and we need to know why. What is the reason? And that's why you've done a good job of explaining to me how it could be fakeologist related. And is there a greater reason for circumcision than health? And that's the main idea. Is there a reason why is it health, or is that a cover story? That would be the only reason to remove a part of your body. We know that they remove problematic parts of the body. In many cases, they have they remove appendixes. They remove tonsils. They remove adenoids. There are many parts of the body that get removed for health reasons.
Yes, but the thing is that there is the traumatic factor, because most of the parts that are removed are not removed immediately or so after birth. And secondly, one of aspects that is interesting also is the fact that it's applying a social control on the parents also. It's not only the kids.
It's social control on the level of vaccines. Because that's a procedure that is really done by intimidation and fear. There's no sound science. There's no other side of the argument presented. It's just that everybody does it, and if you don't do it, you could die. That's not a great reason to do anything.
Yes, especially when the numbers are not that high on the penile cancer, urinary tract infection, or whatever. As far as I know, the subject is of interest to me because that is a lie that is bring forward to the parents. I think that many medical societies around the world are clearly saying, if you can believe them, that the benefits does not outweigh the risks and the traumatic factor also.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, the traumatic factor is really hard to measure because most people don't have memories till they're about six. So,
the traumatic factor, we can't describe it. We can measure in a different way, in the sense that for example, the antactivists that are circumcised will tell you about their experience, and even though they might not have been traumatized at the moment, they are now, if you know what I mean. They are traumatized about that right now.
I suppose, but we don't have enough witnesses to it, because when you have it done, you've got no way to communicate, and you can't remember anything before six, I've always said. You have no memories that you can recount before you're about 6 years old. Anything before that are memories of what you were told happened, which is a lot different than
to that point,
your own
I would
memory.
Say that the child has to be restrained in some cases, in many cases, and they are screaming, they are fighting, they are clearly knowing and perceiving that something very bad and awful is happening to them. To be honest, I don't really know.
Yeah, but if it's not something that they can consciously remember, then does it really count? It's almost like
yes.
the tree no, falling in the forest without anyone to hear no. it. Does it make a sound?
No. No, because the brain, there is the so many brain patterns, so many things are established during those days.
We don't know, but we don't know about the brain. The brain is more mysterious than fake space. We don't know anything really about the brain. Yeah, we can take pictures of it and measure the heat and measure the chemicals. We don't have a clue what's going on in the brain.
Yes, but the thing is that in absence of real data, I will abstain from taking the risk to traumatize the child, you know? If I'm not sure 100% that is something that will not register some way inside the brain in a neurological way or whatever, by establishing a pathway that was not to be established at this age or whatever... I don't know how to explain it better, but I will not take the risk. I will not take the sanity of my male child as a bet on the fact that, yes, they are too young and they will not register. It's too much of a risk, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, well, if I had a son, I probably wouldn't get it done either. I would say, when he's old enough, I'd say, if you want to get it done, go for it. But I'd wait a while till you could compare your sexual sensation before and after, so that maybe you could live to tell the tale for future, because once it's off, you can't put it back on.
Yes. And the argument of the cleaning and whatever... It's pointless. I mean, if you are a human and your parents are human and they teach you how to clean yourself properly, that argument is invalid. And also one thing is that some ladies on the internet will say that if you are not clean, it's not nice when you are about to have an intimate relationship. So thing is, I don't have intimate relationship in parking lot or shady places. I do it inside of nice places with access to running water, hot running water. So even in that sense, what kind of person is disgusting enough to be about to have sex with someone and not clean himself or herself before? I mean, it's a question of personal hygiene, you know?
So the question is, why are they lying? Just like, why are they not showing us the Earth from space if they can go up high at least? Why are they lying about this? What is the reason? How did it come about?
One is money. It's a useless medical procedure that is factored to the parents, firstly. It's a spiritual also, in the sense that you can get parents to agree to the mutilation of their children at a risk at that, if you were to believe the article. So, and even if you were not to believe the article, there is a distinctive risk. Is it on the brain, like I said, the establishment of pattern, or even the fact that cutting a part of anywhere on the body can lead to problems afterward or whatever. I mean, taking the risk of a medical procedure it makes no sense. So the reason why they lie about it, like I said, as far as I see it, is it's a question of control. It's applying control to people. Because since you have agreed for your child to be mutilated, then it's easier on them to get you to agree to vaccinate the child or to get him to apply to some social program or whatever. Register in such and such an institution. So I think that it's the first layer of control on a child that is applied by the powers that be, let's say.
Yeah. Well, you could consider it an emasculation where you are you're just reducing the potency of the male by, I would say, hobbling or impairing the most powerful motivator of men, which is the penis and its actions. So in a way, it's a form of emasculation, which is, speaks to your idea about control. Yes. And if it is a form of sexual governor, where it governs the sexual drive of a male, which then is yes. governing his motivations to do anything.
Yes, and also, it, as far as I know by my interaction with those people, it can create, and I don't say those people in a derogative way, of course, is that they feel some resentment toward their parents and some and the medical community at large. So I think that it's not a sane way to get an individual into adult life, to have them have resentment to their parents for that. And also that might be one of the
I've never heard of that. I've never I don't resent my parents because first of all on that topic, because first of all, most circumcised males have never even heard of Intactivision. Intactivision or Intactivists? they've never even heard of the concept. So there's no widespread resentment of parents because of it. So I would discount that
probably not.
Idea. I don't think, if you don't know about something, then you can't be mad about it. Can't be mad
about
it.
Yes, on
the
large scale, it's correct. But on a more particular level, I have been.
If I was in,
I have came across.
Yeah. That. Well, yeah, because you're interviewing lots of these guys. But if I would say 100%,
but the general public is not really
would be resentful. They'd be resentful, yes. But that is their whole raison d'être. That's why they're
because
they resent and they dislike and they want to discourage future. But anyway,
yes,
it's
might,
a very personal
and I might not be
thing.
So, to be honest, some of the their method I'm not so much a fan of. For example, they have a way to describe, to graphically shock the people, is that to wear a white pants with a blood stain near the crotch to show
I think, yes. Shock and awe is always the way to get people's attention. I don't have a problem with that. I think it's gross, but it's...
yes, that's not something I want to see on a public setting, to be honest.
No, I don't either, but you got to get people's attention in this age of outrage. We need outrage. Outrage is the currency of the day. Give me a few minutes here.
Yes. Yes, it might be the case that outrage is the thing of the day, but I personally would rather have a nice and level-headed debate than to be shocked. And yes, the thing is that you are on the street with your child and you get to explain some things that you were not really to explain on that specific topic. But like I've said, I'm really, really keen on speaking about antactivism, and I always try to bring this guy in with fakeologists because they are a good bunch, they are well-spoken, they are eloquent, they know how to defend their ideas, and it's always a pleasure to speak with them. And also, yes, I think that circumcision is something that is horrible medical practice, if it can be called a medical practice anymore at this point. And it's something that is close to me because I am not circumcised. My son is, and I didn't have any say in the matter. So the resentment part, maybe that I fit in, you know, maybe that apply to me, the resentment part. But it's okay, it's life, it is what it is. And maybe, like I've said, if no one ever brings intactivism to his attention, he will live a happy and... meaningful and fruitful sexual life without never bothering about being circumcised. But yes, the resentment part that I can relate to somehow. But that's what it is. People will listen to the doctors. They always listen to the doctors. I listen to the doctors. If I feel some kind of pain and the doctor is saying to me that I need an open heart surgery, we'll probably do it without asking too much question in the end. So It is what it is. People will believe the doctors in any type of situation, but if you have the time, the opportunity to have a second opinion, please, please, please always take a second opinion and never have any type of surgery or medical procedure that is invasive. Therefore, or radiation even. Don't know if it can be considered invasive, but yes, please, if you have the possibility, take a second medical opinion and don't don't circumcise your kids. I mean, it's pretty logic. Why would you want your son to be restrained and some parts of his body removed on the assumption that he will not be traumatized and that will have no effect or whatever? Like Ab said, the chemistry, the functionment, the building of the brain, of the personality, the inner things that happen to you as a toddler, do they really register or not? I really don't know, to be honest, but I rather not take the bet on my son, if it's possible. But sometimes in life you happen to be in a situation where things happen to you that you are not really agreeing with. And unless you take some violent action, there is no way to change that. Insist, I am really not advocating any kind of violence. There is a rupture point, let's say. A point where you can say anything you want, but it doesn't matter. But yes, I think that somehow activism and fakeology are related because it's media fakery. It was promoted as a normal thing to do. It still is. There are countless people on Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, whatever. Even people that are totally unrelated to the issue, like female, for example. I mean, if you were to think that a woman can have an abortion and that a man has no say in it, I would think that a woman should abstain to have any say in the matter of circumcision. We can, of course, have an opinion, because each and everyone can have an opinion, but I would think that it's not a matter that the woman should have must say in it, the circumcision each issue. But the fact is that you can find countless YouTube videos of women speaking on that specific issue.
No, I don't mind. It's the same as a man speaking about abortion.
Exactly. That was the point I was making.
Yeah. Well, I think it's fine, but it's fine to speak about it. Well, who knew it was a conversation worth having? Really, I would never have thought about it. But if there's fakeology involved and we're not being told the truth, you know, the thing about fakeology is we always get tied up into health because there's a lot of very strange myths involved with health in so many ways. And the stories about medicine have some very mythological, some very phony stories to start off the whole medicine.
Yes.
And who knew? Most people think, oh, well, if we're taking a medicine now, it must be thoroughly researched and tested. But if you check the beginning story of vaccinations, you would be stunned. And actually, I want to list the top 25 books that describe the beginning and the opposition to vaccinations, because they're not in the curriculum anymore. Nobody knows that there was a huge, huge opposition to vaccinations at the beginning as quackery and alchemy and fake science and junk science. But those books have been silenced because just not mentioning them is a form of censorship. So that idea that there was no opposition and the science is settled and 97% of everyone agrees that it's real, that's not good enough when it comes to the story for most people. They want both sides of the story. And if everyone had both sides of the story, would there be as much support for it? And I think the answer is no. And it would cause a lot of disruption in the business model that is vaccinations, and that's the problem.
Yes, but in the age of the internet,
I think every parent every parent, every future parent, better to do it beforehand, because you don't have much time once a child is born. Every parent or future parent should read those 25 books on vaccination and how the story started and those that are opposed to it. And if so,
yes,
if you're still convinced the vaccination is right, then at least you are informed about the opposition.
Yes, and also I will figure that those books are full of are full of useful information that you can bring forward to your child physician when the vaccination topic comes to the discussion. There is probably, if and I don't really know the legislation around the world, but if there is absolutely no possibility for you to not vaccinate your children, there is probably a lighter scenario that can be applied. You know what I mean? Even if you were to be obligated somehow to vaccinate your child, by being informed and to know somehow what you are speaking about, there might be a way to at least avoid part of it or have a different schedule than any other children, if vaccination altogether cannot be avoided.
Yes. Which I think they always can be avoided, but there's a lot of factors when vaccinating a child. There's parents and their difference of opinions. And
yes, the thing is that, for example,
government.
You cannot travel to some country without being vaccinated.
Yeah, well, I guess I won't be traveling. Now, the thing is, it's a big thing that's tied to fakeology, because fakeology is a study of the idea that everybody can be lied to and they not know that they're being lied to on any subject in the world, including health. So if you know that idea, if you know people can be fooled, 100% of the people can be fooled all the time, then you really have to question the science, so-called science, behind health and the health business, because it's a business, really. And that's where the tie-in comes for me. So if everyone is saying do this, I want to know why. And did anyone say don't do this, and why did they say that? Are they
and who started to say
or
do this?
Are they? Yeah, are the people that oppose to certain ideas, are they just cranky nut bars? Or are they just a fringe that's been marginalized because they are telling the truth?
Yes.
And wouldn't that be terrible?
Yes, but your point is right, because at each and every point in history, I'm probably sure that there were people that were against electric public lightning at one point. So, of course, each and every issue needs to be researched. Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Probably. Yeah, and the people that made chamber pots were against against plumbing.
Exactly. Exactly.
And the guys that
and the opposite is true
cleaned
also.
The gutters. Yeah, and all the rodent pest control people were probably against sanitation too.
Yes. Yes, and the opposite is true, because there were so many useless technology that were forced upon us at one point because of the economical interest of a certain class of individuals, for example.
Yeah, no one's going to let go of their business willingly.
No. Which is a normal reaction for each and every individual. If there is a way.
Now, looking at that, everyone wants to preserve their way of life and their way of living. Getting back to the circumcision story, are you satisfied that it is probably a fake story, a placeholder story, where it's just meant to start a conversation on whether circumcision should be government or industry sanctioned?
I don't really know if the story is totally fake, but at the very least, they brought back that story at this specific time for a specific meaning. At least that is an established fact. They somehow did a follow-up on something that was very old because of some development of the story that is totally pointless and that doesn't have really any importance. So, yes, I said that the agenda at least is very clear in the fact that the story was brought back to 56 years after the fact. So, in that sense, I clearly see the fakery, but to say that the story itself is altogether fake is a distinct possibility, but I cannot say that 100% at this point. But clearly this story is used to further an agenda and to bring forward a discussion. But in that specific case, I am pretty in tune with that agenda, so I will not complain about that specific case. Because obviously that horrible story can only deter parents to get their kids circumcised. So if that's what it takes to get that horrible practice discounted altogether in North America, why not? But I can clearly see that it's an orientation of something that is an older story and that is rehashed and reused for further purpose. Yes, that I can clearly see.
Okay, that's a very political answer. But okay.
But to say that the story is fake altogether is very difficult. Like I said, if I can take some time to look the parents up and the physician and everything, there might be a distinct possibility that the story is faked.
All right, well, you know, it's, and like it's I good said, that you are critical, yeah.
So it's difficult to say if it's fake or not, but one thing I can say is that the parents are from Iran, so they are not that difficult to research. They seem to have a public life, let's say. They publish some content online, so if I were to take the time to research them, it will probably be easy to establish if they ever had a child, and if said child ever was mutilated and died as the result of the mutilation. But the thing is that the child was also very, very young. So if you were to fake the existence of a child, a toddler is the easiest one, you know. It's easy to say, oh, she was pregnant and the baby was only 22 years old and he died. It's an horrible story, it's so sad and whatever.
Yeah, but if they're phony people, it's easy to fake because there's nothing to fake. It's just a story.
Yes.
You know, there's no one you gotta lie to, because if they don't exist, they could just be pictures of people.
Yes, that's why I say that it might be possible to research them more and establish if they are really real people, and if they are real people, they had a child. Because they are both Iranian, as far as I can gather, so there are probably not that much Iranian people in Canada.
Well, that's... you'd be surprised. Actually, I'm going to try and do an interview with someone I met in my work who just came here 9 months ago, and he's from Iran. And he left because things are getting bad there again. We've had many waves of Iranians in Canada. The first one was in the 70s. I'm not sure. I guess those that were opposed to the Shah of Iran in the 70s, they left. And then there was the Islamic Revolution, which was started off by the embassy story in 1979. So another wave of Iranians came to Canada. And this guy is actually my age, and he just came because he said things are bad for him and the gang that runs Iran, and these non-connected global countries like Iran and Syria, they're run by gangs. They're run by a gang, a ruling class, and it's just, there's sort of an unchecked power.
Yes.
They steal a lot of money from a lot of people, and people that want to do business fairly and get successful well, they get clipped very quickly. And if they don't agree to the extortion, then they get...
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Those idiots don't even know where we live.
But if they don't agree to the extortion, then they get killed and or told to leave before they get killed. I believe that.
Yes, but the fact is that Iran is a big market that is somehow untapped by the bigger company in the world, as far as I know, of course. That's why it would be interesting to get this guy on and have the chance to hear him from him firsthand. But as far as I know, the bigger company of the world are not really that much tapping into the Iranian market, and that is the big problem.
Because they had an American puppet in the 70s, the Shah, who did what he was told. And then he was corrupt, obviously. You have to pay, if you want to control a country, you got to get someone on the take. And the people got tired of it, of the stealing.
Yes, but earlier than that, even before the days of the Shah, and if I'm correct, those are the events that brought the Shah to power, there was this prime minister named Mossadegh that wanted to nationalize the Iranian petrol. And with the help of what was not already the CIA, I think that it was, yes, already the CIA, because it was in the early to mid 53 maybe. Let me just type the name, because I did not say something stupid on air. But Mossadegh was the Iranian prime minister, and he was toppled by the CIA, the MI6, and the British Petroleum. This guy had some progressive view on the trade of petroleum and who should benefit from it in the end.
Sure.
And he had a short-lived term as a prime minister, let's say. More than 1 year.
Anyone who wants to share the wealth is not acting in corporate interests and has to be removed. And if he's not really removed, then it's symbolic. And it's to warn any future organic politician that you shouldn't bother trying to share the wealth, because this is what could happen to you. And same with Kennedy and all these guys that are supposed heroes of the people. They're removed, and nobody knows why or how. It's always a mystery, and that's enough to scare anybody who thinks they can help everybody else. By sharing the wealth and the resources, bad things could happen, and will happen.
Let's listen to an old clip. It starts with the end resume of a boxing match, but after that we will have the chance to hear from this the voice of this Mossadegh fellow. So
this fight too will stop. It was a densely packed session of the Security Council at New York when Persia's ailing premier, Dr. Mossadegh, arrived on the arm of Mr. Trygve Lie, the United Nations Secretary. Shaky on his pins, but firm enough in his policy, he was opposed by Britain's Sir Gladwin Jeff. Dr. Mossadegh, speaking in French, reiterated the Persian attitude to the oil dispute. Sir Gladwin asked Dr. Mossadegh,
"Not to brood unduly on old imagined wrongs, but to concentrate on the broader aspects, and to show, by his attitude, that he, too, welcomes a constructive solution, which, as I think I said in my initial speech, will enable us to achieve some synthesis between the industrialized West and the as yet only partially industrialized nations of the immemorial East that will redound to the benefit of the world as a whole."
Of course, there are none so deaf as those who won't hear. There were over 61,000 people at...
So that was Mossadegh speaking. So yes, the Iranian story is long and circumvoluted and full of foreign implications, full of foreign secret service, shady people doing shady things on shady set. But it's a fascinating story, and if Ab can get this guy on, that would be a great experience to have the chance to get some more of it first hand. And there is a lot to be said about the story of that country, like I said, the implication of foreign government and those things. But I don't know much, to be honest, about this specific coup that happened in 1953. That, at least, I remember correctly. The name of the guy also. So those are mainly the only two things I know about that story. That Mossadegh was the Iranian prime minister and that he was toppled in 1953. Interesting guy, to say the least. So, while the coup is at the time referred to in the West as Operation Ashraf, to Gaia, Ajax Amsterdam. So, while the coup is at times referred to in the West as Operation Ajax, after its CIA cryptonym, in Iran, it is referred to as the 1020 Mordar 2032 coup d'etat, after its date on the Iranian calendar. Mossadegh was imprisoned for 3 years, Mossadegh was imprisoned for 3 years, then put under house arrest until his death and was buried in his own home so as to prevent a political fear. In 2013, the US government, under Barack Obama, should I add, in 2013, the US government formally acknowledged that the US role in the coup as part of its foreign policy initiative. So, it is what it is. They said it did themselves. It might say some interesting thing about 9/11 and the hot old period in a few years. I will probably be dead by that time.
Yeah, so that was Mossadegh you played there.
Yes. Yes,
most
I did
likely another world puppet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which in 2013 right. The CIA recognized their implication is in the coup d'etat.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully this guy I met, he says he's was in the energy field. So then I laid the nuclear hoax on him, and he wasn't against the idea. He wasn't against it, but he said he's been in a nuclear power plant. So he's going to be interesting if I can get him to talk. But he said things are bad financially there. They have 70% inflation right now, which is tough to deal with. And also he said whatever you hear about Iran is not true for the most part, and which is what I thought. But I think the main thing with these countries, Iran, Syria, is they all are run by you could say a strong man, which means it's sort of a mafia situation where you have to pay them to run your business. And once you start making money, they usually want more. So it's not really a great model for competition and business. And the only way you can get rid of these mafias in power is you've got to use outside countries like the United States to create stories to villainize these gangs that run the countries, to try and get them out. Because for the majority of the people, these gangs work. The people that follow along, they get paid and they have a good life. But the people that don't cooperate, they have a hard time, and they could easily be, if they don't cooperate, they're usually killed. What else is there? What other tools do you have in the mafia?
Yes.
Or a mafia business? You don't have...
Yes.
Yeah, we
and the Mossadegh story is very reminiscent of Closer to You, the story of the coup d'etat against the Jacobo Arbenz in Guatemala, which is almost the same scenario. Jacobo Arbenz was the president of Guatemala, the short-lived president of Guatemala, that a coup d'etat set up by the CIA and United Fruit, which is now known as Chiquita Bananas, organized to get this guy out of power, because like Mossadegh, he wanted to nationalize the main resource of the country. For Mossadegh, it was oil, and for Arbenz, it was bananas. So, some company, some foreign interest, helped by the CIA and other shady individuals that gravitate in those circles, stage a coup d'état to get this guy out of power. And they did the same a few years after that. I think it was in 73 or 74 with Allende in Chile. Same thing.
Yeah.
You get a progressive puppet inside.
We had Jack Layton in Canada. Name is Jack Layton, L-A-Y-T-O-N.
Jack Layton.
You can look him up.
Yes.
He was a populist figure on the left. And guess what? He got fast-acting cancer. Just as soon as he seemed to be in a position where he could possibly form the government.
Okay, yes, yes. He was in office from May the 2nd, 2011 to the 22nd of August 2011. But he was on a leave of absence from July the 20th of 11. And he died on August... when did he die? Yes, August 22. So that's the official death
date. Oh, there's, was there's not your 22 in again, anymore. Eh?
Yes, exactly.
There's your 22.
Yes.
Now, that's not proof of anything. It's just it's either a sign or it's a coincidence. You have to decide. But
yes.
He was
the Wikipedia picture that I will post on the show notes show him in 2011. And the guy look on death's door, to be honest. So I don't know if it was his normal look, but the guy looked pretty...
No, he was... looked on death's door, he did, and he may have really died of pancreatic cancer, or he may have just starved himself for the role. I don't know.
Yes.
Look at, I always think of Christian Slater in the movie The Machinist or The Mechanic.
Christian Bale it is. But yes, the name of the movie
Christian
is right,
Bale.
The Machinist. Christian Bale, yes.
He looked like a stick figure in that movie.
Yes.
And if it really was him and not a body double, and maybe it was a body double, we know that real actors don't always do those extreme things to be in the movie. They get doubles to do them. But whoever did it definitely had to starve themselves.
Yes. Yes, but the guy was old, so who knows? And they always add those layers to the story. They say his father, Robert Layton, had the same type of cancer, and his wife had the thyroid cancer. Everyone has cancer in that family, which makes it easier for people to believe that this guy really had cancer.
Well, the mayor of Toronto, Rob Ford, guess what? He had a rare cancer and then disappeared. What day did he die? Can you look him up again?
Rob Ford. Rob Ford. The great Rob Ford.
And by the way, IPS, who I do like his audios, keeps saying that Rob Ford was Chris Farley, which to me is just ridiculous.
Yes, so you know what? Rob Ford died on March 22.
Oh, no, not another 22. 322, 322.
Yes, let's look at the date where Chris Farley died.
If this was coincidologist, you'd say that, it's just lots of people die on the 22nd. You could say that if the deaths are divided evenly throughout the year, then the chances of dying on the 22nd would be 1 out of 30 in general, because there's generally 30 days in a month.
Yes.
Which, 1 out of 30, those are pretty slim odds.
Yes. Chris Farley and Rob Ford does not look like the same people at all. At least in
my opinion. I saw one picture where you weren't really looking at the face. They kind of have the same body shape. Kind of. But that's it. The only thing they have in common is they were white and fat. That's it.
Yes. So my theory is that Doug Ford is Rob Ford. It's easier that way.
Yeah, but there's too many videos of them standing beside each other.
Yes, yes.
I'll give my Rob Ford theory again. That is that his idea was to limit the size of municipal government and have it run very leanly without much money. He said it was too big. He was on the taxpayer's side. And yes. I don't know. It's really hard to limit the budgets of a public institution because the unions are very powerful in the public realm, and they don't really allow any changes, especially to their salaries. Very hard to make
changes. Yes. Yes, it's a big job provider that you cannot move that easy.
I don't think he got very far when he was mayor. And then I think they made up stories about him, about drug use, to basically write him out of the script. Yeah, write him out of the script. Now, I don't know at what point he gave up and just decided to go along with it. The script, that is, to get rid of him, but I think there was a power play at work. Now, his opposition was a politician, an establishment politician, which means that politician comes from money, Toronto money. And this guy is a nice guy, but he could not get elected dog catcher. He tried to become premier of the province. He could not do it. He did not win. He could not get any support. And I think he tried a couple other offices, couldn't get in. And at the same time, Rob's brother Doug, who I would say was more politically ambitious, he really wanted power too, maybe more for the sake of power and more for the sake of business. But he was Rob Ford without the charm, without the charisma. So he also was not likely to get everyone on his side required to win. So I think there was some deal that was made among these guys that said, listen, Rob Ford will not run for mayor again. And the only good reason they could create was you'll have to die.
Yes.
There's no other good reason why he should not run, but death is a really good reason. So
yes,
they
indeed.
Said, listen, Doug will die, or Rob will die, and that will pave the way for the other guy who could not get elected in any office to run pretty much unopposed, which is what he did. And that guy won the mayor. He became the mayor of Toronto, and he still is the mayor, and he's a very... He's not a bad mayor, but he wouldn't have...
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
But he wouldn't have won if Rob Ford... I always mix these guys' names up. It's crazy. He wouldn't have won if Rob was running. All right.
Yes.
So then that cleared the way for his brother, Doug, who was also going to run for mayor, but decided to create his own form of coup to knock off the guy that won the leadership for the party, which eventually would become the premier if he was still the leader. So they exercised another type of psyop against the guy that was running the party that was probably going to win the province, which means he'd be the premier. That's how our system works in British parliamentary democracies. So they made a smear campaign against that guy, and then Doug got in through illegitimate means, I'll say, because they held a phony vote. And I know it was a phony vote because I couldn't get a ballot, and I was a member of the party. I couldn't even get a ballot. So he got in. He won by ballot, even though I believe it was phony. They just put him in because he had the Ford name, and there's a lot of confusion between his brother and him, which is good for him.
That and the empathy factor of the loss that he just suffered.
Yes, the empathy factor. Yes, very good. I forgot about that. Yes, so he won. He got himself as leader, and then their party became the majority, and he became premier, which is a very powerful position for controlling a lot of money and a lot of influence. And even if they don't get paid well as politicians, we all know that they influence massive budgets.
Yes, and I would figure that after their tenure in office, they will not pay for much of the meal they are taking in restaurant, or, you know. There are some perks
there's a lot. The perks are not food. Believe me, they're not starving.
No. But just that. Just after office, you are a known figure. You can get into any business, and each and everyone is willing to work with you.
There's
to
a lot
have
of
their
payback,
name associated with
and it's
you.
All
yes.
legal. Yeah, of course. There's a lot of payback. Yes. It's all legal. You get put on boards of companies and get crazy salaries for doing nothing. I mean, none of it's illegal.
I think the conference circuit that those guys are also undertaking after their political career, I think that this is also a way of a payback, because they are paid insane amount to speak in front of crowd of student or business manager.
For helping influence legally this public spending. Yes, because there's a lot of money in that. So they got that. That is a very complex theory of political chess, where I take your rook and you take my bishop. It was very complicated, but it all worked, and it's not by accident. And I don't think most people could care less about the whole political thing, but I care about it because I live here, and I comment on things that are around me, not in other places, because they affect me, especially if I want to keep living here, and my family lives here. So that's why I've developed that theory, and I don't know if I've explained it before, but you helped bring it out, and I appreciate that. So this is all related to fecology, because they use psyops and all kinds of dirty trick methods to make this happen. And the biggest method is the sudden cancer, sudden rare cancer trick. Nobody is dying. They're using it as a trick. It's a parlor trick to remove people from the scene. And I guarantee you, I know people in their neighborhood because it's close to where I was born. And I've met a couple. One of my friends has been on that street where the family lives. And neighbors talk to him, and they know, I don't know if they know for sure or just they get the whiff that Rob is still around. And he does come at night or make occasional visits to his house. So the neighborhood knows the truth, let's put it that way, in a way that you can't really verbalize easily. They know that the guy is still alive, they know it's a dirty trick, but it doesn't matter because it's all for the greater good, as the Masons would say.
Yes. Yes, he might be still be in the shadow somewhere, hiding, living the good life
out of
the payback money that he had while he was in charge of the attribution of big public budget for things such as construction, maintenance, or social programs even.
Well, I think the guy
about
got
the,
in.
The migrant.
The guy that got in comes. The guy that got in probably has lots of money. He probably just gave him a couple million bucks of his own money. Probably yes. That happened too.
Clearly.
Again, it's not illegal.
No. But it would be. It should definitely be illegal.
So deception is everywhere. And psyops and fakery are everywhere in every country, every jurisdiction. You just have to be able to figure it out and find them.
Yes.
I'm sure yes. He's got similar stories in Switzerland.
Oh, yes. There are not maybe of people that die and disappear of the political scene, but yes, there are a lot of people that disappear for a reason or another. Some manufactured scandal or some corruption scandal that suddenly expose all of the Republic, but yes, only one guy is going down. And when I say Republic, let it be clear that the Switzerland is not a Republic, and as far as I know, never was, but the Geneva canton, the Geneva area is named the Republic and Canton of Geneva. So that is the Republic I'm referring to currently. So yes, there is a lot of local political scandal, but those are of low importance.
As far as I know, Republic refers to Germany as a republic, is it not?
I don't know. The Germany, Bundesrepublik, yes, I think so.
The idea, and the United States is a republic. The idea of a republic is you have autonomous states within. They control most of the actions, most of the governmental services in their jurisdiction. And the Federation is just for military and foreign
yes.
affairs. That's it.
Yes, the Switzerland is a confederation, even.
Yes.
Which I don't really know the distinction of, but Switzerland is a confederation, the Helvetic Confederation. Anyway, it's almost been 3 hours that we have been going on, and if I really want to enjoy the sun before it gets dark, I only have 3 hours left. So I figured that it was an interesting discussion. Did you have anything else to mention or that you want us to speak about?
No, I'm out of air. My lungs are not able to push much more air across my vocal cords because I don't know if I have a cold or some nasal problems these days as I get older, but I think I've exhausted myself, probably exhausted the audience listening to my ramblings, so I really appreciate you hosting my ramblings.
Yes, that was I appreciate you hosting my ramblings the other way around, I would say. But
well, and it's mutually beneficial. And if you want to switch your Friday audio chat to Saturday morning audio chat, I'm happy with that, because this is almost the only time when I have a few hours where I can chat without interruption. Because it's a quiet time of the week, I don't have business calls flying in all day, and it's a good time for me, so you know, I'd be happy to entertain you in your post if you want to entertain me and my post.
Yes, that seemed to be a pattern that is establishing slowly.
So I don't mind if you switch the name of it to whatever you want.
Yes.
It's not important, really, to have a...
Yes, but the interesting fact is that while we were speaking, Gaia took the time to make a Freakopedia page for this particular audio chat, which is the 631, named Ye Old Faith, in homage to the
Thomas
Dutton. That
was very nice of Gaia.
Yes,
you know,
indeed.
Even though Gaia challenges me, I don't mind it, because I still think Gaia is a good guy. He's a passionate guy, so... you know, I'm thankful that he came by, and he gets a lot of discussion going, and he's got a lot of good points. So I just because he's negative towards what I have to say sometimes is not a reason to ban him. So he's always welcome to comment, and I appreciate the Fakeopedia a lot, and the fact that he made a thing on the fly is fantastic.
Yes, it's just incredible.
I think he's more doing it for you because he's a big fan of you, especially since you're coming
yes,
down there.
Yes, whatever the reason, the fact is that he took the time, and just that is incredible. So each and every one, they enjoy listening to it and want to have an access of to the show notes without having to bother registering to Discord. Everything is on Fakeopedia on the page. That is a frack. It's at least at the moment, it's still named a frack. And it is the 24th. Can you imagine that? The 24th. Not counting all the other things that were recorded that are all listed on the Fakeopedia page of the Friday Audio Chat that Gaia made once again. And yes, a countless amount of audio to be found there.
A wealth of audio, and make sure you donate. On your Patreon page, does it say how many donors you've got? Because I didn't see it.
There is only you at the moment.
Oh, come on, everybody. If I can do it, you can do it. Come on, chip in a dollar, for God's sakes. A dollar. It's not even a full franc.
Yes, at the very least, take the time to listen, to react, and to participate. And you can also join me on email at FridayAudioChat@protonmail.com. So that is the email address, FridayAudioChat@protonmail.com, where I can be found.
All right. Thank you very much, Jairus. And well.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. And I think that everyone listening did enjoy it because it was a great episode. We did go over some things that were on the main blog, and it's always a good thing to link the audio chat to the main blog.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here, and there's sub-blogs underneath the main blog. There's a Discord. We got the Mastodon, which is pretty much dead. I got my Twitter feed. They're all over the place. Everywhere.
Yes, so, but that's the way to do it.
Here's something. On my phone number, 647-812, whatever the phone number is on the blog, I actually got a text message, the first text message I ever got on that phone number. And someone from Hawaii sent me a link to a story about the 60 so-called satellites that Elon Musk has put up for global internet. So the only thing I care about is I got a text message that came through on my phone number from a guy in Hawaii, or a Hawaii phone number. So I thought that was pretty neat.
Yes. Yes, that's excellent. Yes, each and every reaction is good.
You could call me. If you do phone me at that number, I have a system that automatically records it, and I will save it, so don't call me and start cussing me out or anything like that. But I do have a phone number, and when I do open phone calls one day, we will use it, and it exists. So, yeah, I'd prefer if people send me an email, because a text message is, well, annoying. In the sense that it only can have so many characters. But, yeah, you can contact me a million ways.
Yes, the phone number is 647-812-3917. 647-812-3917.
And I got another phone call that the guy left a message, and he was talking about the meat industry in Michigan. And I tried to call him back 4 times, but he didn't answer. Because obviously if you leave a message, I have your phone number on the system, so he wanted me to call him back. I tried. I don't know if it was Fakeology related really, but it was about the meat, the slaughterhouses, and, you know, I'm sure lots of bad things happen in slaughterhouses. I still eat meat. I don't really want to know how they make it, because I know that the animals aren't always... you know, treated properly. I feel bad for them, but ultimately, of course, they pay the ultimate price so I can have something to eat. There you go. I'll talk about it if you want to, but I'm not sure the Fakeology angle.
Yes. So, and also, each and everyone can join Discord if they have something to record, to say, to get to discuss on a more instant basis, of course.
Absolutely. All right, 3 hours it is. It looks like 3 hours on my clock here. So
yes.
Thank you very much, and have a great night or day.
Yes.
All right,
yes.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, everyone. That has been Fakeologist Audio Chat 631, otherwise known as Frac 24. And yes, we did go over quite a few interesting topics. Not really out of Toronto area, let's say, but it's always interesting. So I will leave you with what I had beginning with, then it is the Guerrilla Girl. I will find something relevant to the Guerrilla Girls to leave you with, if I can find something. Apparently, they are not that.
That's all, folks.